Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Wirth Harley Davidson North. Kansas City's biggest selection of brand new 2021 Harleys are here now at I-29 in Tiffany Springs or online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Bears down by two. Butler will drive against Culver and he puts it in. We're tied at 81. 2.1 seconds remaining. 105 to play in overtime. West Virginia by one. Davion Mitchell. Mitchell will drive. Banker, good by Mitchell. And the Bears have won over West Virginia. The Bears win it in overtime over the Mountaineers, 94-89. The Bears clinch a share of the Big 12 Conference Championship.
Another offensive rebound. Flips it back out to Trent Frazier. The Illini on the offensive glass. Frazier with a three, and he stuck it from way out top. Frazier knocks down a three. His first of the game. And the lead is 21.
And now, wondering how in the world Missouri beat that Illinois team, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome to a glorious Wednesday. No, it's not just the weather. It's the jam-packed program we're bringing your way. It's proudly brought to you by our friends at Wirth Harley-Davidson North. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. All month long, you can get the Harley of your dreams. It is a, well, a great option. Choose 0% interest for up to 72 months or choose full retail. Book value for your trade. Shop inventory online, then come into the store. Make your choice. Not all buyers will qualify. See dealer for details. See them online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. See them in person at I-29 and Tiffany Springs. We do have coming your way today a little Eric Eager to wrap up the program. We'll work back to front. The data scientist will be here. We'll get his take on the Chiefs offseason and how they should attack it. We'll talk some theories. Do you go with one big free agent or a lot of little free agents? What's the path to take? The analytics, the big brain, the doctor, Eric Eager, will join us in the 5 o'clock hour.
And you don't mean big and little questions. By like size, like two small guy players and one large player.
No, I mean big contract. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very important.
I'm easily confused.
Thank you. I can confuse. So we've come together. We've come to the right place. No, I meant like, do you go like, say, Trent Williams? Let me just paint it for you. Trent Williams and then league minis? Or do you grab some guys that are, you know, second or third tier guys, two or three second or third tier guys, and then league minis? You're not going to do a lot of shopping, but with the dollars you can create under the cap, how should you shop them? We'll see what Eric Eager, a man of analytics, a man of math, a cultured man,
a man who knows how to ski. Maybe.
I was like, here he goes with this, with his Howard Cosell, but it's actually the villain from Karate Kid 2 doing a Howard Cosell impersonation in the movie Better Off Dead. Yes. For those of you that didn't recognize, I don't know the actor's name, so the only way I can describe him is to put him in another movie.
I can't think of his name either. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
He was also in a James Woods movie where he was the guy that was accused of murder and was in prison and then was in a prison fight. Really good. I can't remember. James Woods had long hair. Was a weed-smoking lawyer. You know, Jed, you probably saw it.
I do, but I'm also stunned that we ever get off track without me opening the mic.
Frank Bohl in the 4 o'clock hour, you jackass. That's what we're going to have, Jed. I get your hint there, buddy. Frank Bohl in the 4. Frank in the 4. It's the alliteration that will help you remember, folks. RJ Anderson from CBS Sports is going to be with us. And with RJ Anderson, what are we going to talk about? What did he write? I forget who wrote what.
We're going to talk about some baseball, 30 different players who might, quote, break out for their teams, and maybe some teams who had the best off seasons, maybe some sleeper off seasons, but just a good old-fashioned baseball conversation.
You could have said he's the baseball guy, and then I would have known that Jeff Kerr is the football guy because we'll talk to him later this hour. about some football. It's different things that he has written about your Kansas City Chiefs in some way, shape, or form. One has written a piece about Eric Bieniemy, and Deuce Staley wrote another piece about Deuce Staley, quoting Tom Brady about Patrick Mahomes having what it takes to become the GOAT. Should that be the case? We'll talk football with Jeff. That's coming up later this hour. We're going to start with some college basketball. Big game last night, West Virginia and Baylor. Baylor getting the road, getting a win on the road at West Virginia. Kansas fans, yes, this absolutely does, in my mind, make your victory against Baylor look even better. You know, I think you would say that they're probably stair-stepping up their play, but, you know, if they were halfway, you know, in between what they brought against West Virginia, which I think winning at West Virginia, you know, saying it took Baylor's A game and that Baylor's back, I'm fine with that. Like, if you're like, oh, no, when they're back, they'll beat West Virginia by 10. I'm not going there. West Virginia's a really good team. So I think the fact that Baylor just 3 days later was playing at that level gives a lot of credibility to the fact that Kansas beat a lot better team than one that's just a little bit better than Iowa State.
It wasn't just that they – it was how Baylor won that game, because West Virginia was making plays. Baylor had to hit about a half dozen big-time shots just in the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game to win. That was a really good win.
It was. And so I would ask the question. I mean, I think it bears – yeah, I think you can ask the question, is right now Kansas the best team in this league? I would lean to Baylor. I would still give it to Baylor because the best team usually doesn't go undefeated in the league, right? Kansas was the best team many, many years in this league, and they still lost 3 or 4 times. So the one loss, and particularly with all the things that we mentioned that were going on, I'd still give the nod to Baylor. The whole body of work has to stand by it. But I think it's at least a discussion to be had. You know, that, hey, has Kansas grown, and have they – I think David McCormick, and we talked about this with Gary Parrish last night, if you missed the 5 o'clock hour, please go to 810WHB.com. Educate yourself on college basketball by listening to Gary Parrish on the podcast. Gary, you know, said, look, David McCormick, he says, I'm big. Sometimes it takes a while, and McCormick's finally becoming the player that they think he can be. And I think when you've got that threat, that 60% threat inside – that's what opens up and gives wide-open looks to three-point shooters, and you get a chance to knock down 40% and really be deadly from out there. Five-out's great, but you got to be really good with the motion, have some really good cuts, backdoor cuts, some kind of Princeton stuff, you know, some counter things, to be able to be forcing the defense to sag inside when you don't have a true post player. But when you've got a guy, you know, and he is a big, physical kid – now, he's not Doak, but there's only a handful of guys that have ever come through college basketball that are Doak as far as their physical strength in that low blocks. But he is a big boy when it comes to college basketball. And if he's a guy that can work, and it's always looked good. You know, I mentioned this with Gary Parrish. Catch, drop step, spin, up, extend the arm, nice follow through, gooseneck, back rim. You know?
Yep.
Up, turn, pivot, spin, lock that, seal the guy to the inside, go up, off the backboard and the back side of the rim and out. Like, what? It looks so good. Like he was a coaching video right up until the ball didn't go in. Why is this thing not going in? I think it's just a matter of the game slowing down a little bit for him, and now he's comfortable with that move. He makes the move a little bit quicker. He's now in rhythm. He's not hurrying it. He's knocking it down, and that is sucking the defense in, which is going to give them more looks on the outside, and they have learned to play together defensively. And I think, you know, their roles are kind of starting to fit in. You know, every year, I'm not going to lie. I get excited. I know we were talking about Baylor and West Virginia, and now I'm kind of sidetracked on Kansas, but I get excited to figure out how Bill Self's screwing something up. I mean, I do. I look in there like, God, is it? Did it wrong kids? Wrong group? Where's his rotation? I mean, because that's all there is. Listen, the reality of it, and I try to always preface everything I say with, you know, earlier this year, I'm like, why hasn't he figured out the rotation? Like, it seems like he's, by this time of the year, he's usually into his rotation. And I prefaced it and said, look, he's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know. But if I were to, you know, question aloud in a meeting, be like, hey, you know, coach, what do you think? Do we need to, you know, just give one guy the point guard duties? Do we need to? And lo and behold, at some point when the weather starts getting warm, that team is clicking. You know, maybe the only one that didn't come around to clicking, which I would love to have seen if it couldn't, and part of the reason it didn't is because it was about this time when his team should click that Joel Embiid went down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they lost a major cog and had to start trying to reinvent themselves. And, you know, that team, I don't think that one never clicked.
No. Lost the second weekend, I think, to Stanford. What's that, 15?
Second. When else has he lost in the second weekend? Ali Farouk Amouche?
You mean let's see.
Northern
Wichita
Iowa.
State, I think, was a second game.
Second round? Okay.
Usually he's good
often.
In the second game of the week, but those are the couple that he's lost in that round.
Yeah. But, you know, here, lo and behold, they're finding themselves again. So, listen, I think Baylor's back atop. They won their first league title in 50 years. Curtis, you've got a historical precedent about Baylor getting there, what it means?
Yeah, I thought we'd maybe save part of this for Frank. I've got some good stuff as far as
you
finances.
You want it for Frank because he was alive then?
Yeah. I've got a pretty nice little list here as far as entertainment and costs of things. And
I was given the heads up about we'd find out what it means for Baylor to win a league title for the first time in 50 years. That was being passed along to me. I was not given a time on when the big man wanted it. Played, so I apologize for
71. I could give you a few, but.
No. We'll tease. 4 o'clock hour. 4 o'clock hour with Frank Bull. We'll do it in the four. We'll do it at four. I'm not, you know, this made it clear. It's when I wanted to do it, we're not going to do it. We'll do it at four. No, I didn't know. I just remembered. I was like, oh, yeah, Curtis got that list. So we'll do that at four to give you an idea of how much time has passed since Baylor won an outright league title in basketball. But I think this speaks to how strong the Big 12 is, the fact that Kansas takes down Baylor. Baylor wins at West Virginia. And Kansas, I think last night's game helped enhance Kansas's ranking or seed, I guess is the better way to put it. That's the proper term, the seed in the NCAA tournament. So good news all around for the Big 12 last night with Baylor getting back. For everybody but West Virginia, they certainly would have won. But I think for the league overall, and again, it's not good for West Virginia to take a loss. A win would have been better for them. But for the league overall, Baylor getting back to being a one seed or solidifying themselves. I think they still were a one seed even after the loss. But solidifying themselves as a one seed does a lot of good for the league overall. It validates the strength of everybody else. And so I think certainly for Kansas, it makes them look a lot better. They're the only team that's beating them now. So it boosts their seed. So best case scenario happened for the Jayhawks last night. Scott Drew, does anybody want to call and tell me that, boy, they've got a new appreciation for Scott Drew?
They probably should, but they probably won't. Somebody last night, I can't think of who it was, it was a known national sports commentator, said that they thought Scott Drew's rebuild of Baylor basketball was the most impressive in the history of college sports. Now, people around here obviously counter with Bill Snyder at K-State, but
it's comparable.
I mean,
he's won a league title now. When Bill Snyder won one, if you want to say he's reached
what
Bill
I'm
Snyder.
Working on. I'm working on the year in 1950. I mean, it's not 1986, 1950.
No, but he didn't win a conference title, and K-State didn't win a conference title in 86.
No. I'm saying, part of the thing about Drew is considered the project that I'm working on right now, going back to 1950. That's what Baylor basketball has been.
So I thought you were cherry picking 86 because K-State was in a bowl game in 86.
They're in a bowl game in like 83, but there are two. But it was 82. If you look around it, it's just pockets of two win seasons.
Yeah.
And they were like 3-40 the 4 years before Snyder took over. So
I think this is comparable. Taking over a team that plays no non-conference games and had a murder within its program.
Right.
You can make it if you want to say this is bigger. You have legs to stand on.
Yep. It's a debate
K-State
worth hearing.
K-State just sucked.
Yep.
There was not actual, you know, murder going on in the program. Mm-hmm. That was happening. I don't think that can be minimized in any way, shape, or form what he took over. But he's doing it a totally different way. We went through the breakdown of the kids and where they came rankings-wise. He's reinvented himself. He's reinvented that program after already getting it to success. The way they were going to Elite Eights is not how they're now winning a league title. And he's reinvented the program, and I think it's impressive. But I think it's good all around for college basketball. Also, last night we saw Illinois lay a beatdown on Michigan. 26 points, I think it was. I want to point out again, for all the excuses you hear from coaches, if you're in your first or second year in a program, okay, I'll listen to it if you're trying to turn something around. But if you've been there for years, we're young, we don't have this guy – You know, we've given a couple examples. One, West Virginia entered last night and exits, and you know, we'll see where they sit at the end of the week. But as the number six team in the country and their first team all Big 12 player, their best player left the program 10 games in. Their best recruit got hurt about the same time. And Bob Huggins is probably going to be second in the Big 12. There's no crying. There's no whining. Bob Huggins, you know, there was a line of questions. They played it on the zone a little bit ago. You know, would you equate this to a heavyweight fight with, guys just trading punches? And I think just the subject matter of the question, yes, I would. Clearly that man would as well. Bob Huggins, of course, said, I'm just trying to win a game. Right? Give the guy some credit. Yeah, I think these were two pretty good teams that went at it really well. And, you know, depending upon when you were going to stop the game as to who was going to win. On this night, I think we were both equal, but credit Baylor, they made the plays where they had to make the plays. But, you know, Bob Huggins, in his way, just went, well, I'm just trying to win a game. He didn't go, well, it's tough, you know, we're without our big man, my top recruit's out. No, just answer the question, that's his team. So this is one of the things and where we've talked about, and I'm going to bring this over to Illinois. Illinois played without a kid, their best player, and they played their last two games and won both, right? They won. They beat Wisconsin on the weekend, right?
I believe so, yeah. They
99% sure that they won that game. Or was it Iowa? Did they beat Iowa on the weekend?
I think it was Wisconsin. Wisconsin. Beat them by five at Wisconsin.
Beat them by five at Wisconsin without their best player. I'm not even going to try to take a shot at the kid's name, but he's a brilliant player. Mizzou fans will remember him. He's the guy that just kept scoring.
Io DeSunmo. He's 21 a game, 5 assists.
And I mean this in all sincerity. If somebody knows Kila Kaahue did marvelous work for me in explaining to me how the English alphabet works in the Polynesian one. First of all, the Polynesian alphabet drops a bunch of letters. You don't realize that until you take a tour in Hawaii and they tell you that. That's how I learned it. There's a bunch of letters they don't use, or maybe not a bunch, but 6 or 8 or 10 of them. But then he told me how you look at the name. Like, every vowel is pronounced. He said, so it's Hawaii. Hawaii. It's like you got to kind of drag the I's. Mm-hmm. Both I's get pronounced. Right? It's I apostrophe I. And I was like, oh, okay. So then now when I look at Polynesian names, I think I do a much better job of trying to do it. I need, is there some kind of grammar rules on the African names? Because if I could get the rules, I think I'd have a better shot at the names.
I remember hearing that name 500 times in that game against Missouri. I'm like, not going to forget that one.
I said, I was like, why don't I know? I realized, you know, when I'm watching Pool Kings with my daughter and the basketball game has no volume, I'm like, I never hear these guys' names pronounced anymore because the volume's up on the TV my kid wants.
You're just watching the action.
Yeah, so I'm, it's great, honey. Yeah. Kids baking championship. Yeah, I think they should go with red. Red too. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm trying to figure out, you know, is that a zone? What are they doing there? Anyway, but that kid was averaging 21.6 rebounds and 5 assists. And they've won against ranked teams at Wisconsin and at Michigan. And the Michigan team was one that was supposed to be the best. So I would ask K-State fans this. When should Brad Underwood have been hired at K-State? Because I think it's undeniable. Maybe that's unfair. Because he hasn't gone to an Elite Eight yet. And he hasn't won a league title yet. So maybe it's unfair to say it's obvious K-State should have hired Brad Underwood. Because there are still things Bruce Weber has done. But Brad Underwood was one of your own. And I think that is, listen, it's not Gene Taylor's fault. It's John Curry's fault. And I think the ship has sailed. I think maybe you had a shot when he was leaving Oklahoma State. Certainly he should have been hired when he was at Stephen F. Austin. When Frank Martin left, he should have been bumped in. Like, that would have been the spot. I think he clearly proved by his performance at Stephen F. Austin, Oklahoma State, and now Illinois that he had the chops and was ready to go in Manhattan, Kansas. But I'm curious. This is so sad because there's a tremendous coach in basketball that in K-State may get a shot at him. It may go south at Illinois the way Bob Huggins it got sour at Cincinnati, and you get an opportunity to go get him. He's certainly got a landing spot. Eddie Sutton had problems at Kentucky, returned home to Oklahoma State. Maybe one day Brad Underwood will return to K-State. But if it's up and running and it's clicking at Illinois, I don't see why he would leave. I always felt that Illinois was a place that you should be able to win with the Chicago basketball talent, the proximity to St. Louis basketball talent, just in the Big Ten country, you know, being close to, you know, the Wisconsin talent, the whole Michigan, get over onto the Michigan side of things. You know, I always thought Illinois was a place that Lou Henson wasn't exactly splitting an atom when he was winning consistently at Illinois. I took a step back from that, right? And Bill Self made it look pretty easy. Lon Kruger made it look pretty easy. Those are all pretty good coaches. But when Bruce Weber struggled, I thought, yeah, what is this going? And our buddy Doug Gottlieb, still friend of the program, even though we don't have him on every week, but nothing but respect for Gottlieb. Gottlieb made a great point. He goes, hey, this job is tougher than people think. You know, he goes, recruiting Chicago, man, there's a lot of politics. There's a lot of crap there. Well, Brad Underwood's figured out how to get talent to Illinois. And I think it's clear, you know, he got talent at Stephen F. Austin in Texas. You know, he was part of getting talent to Kansas State and Manhattan, Kansas, and now he's part of getting talent. The guy knows how to get talent, and clearly he can coach it because he lost his best player the last two games and he beat ranked teams. And I think it's really sad. I feel for UK State fans that you had one of your own sons who was there and could have had the program. And listen, if Bruce Weber's going to get another year, I hope he kicks ass and does a great job. I don't want K-State fans watching bad basketball. And I definitely don't want them watching bad basketball because Brad Underwood's doing well. Because I don't think Brad Underwood's coming to K-State, like I said, until there's some kind of turn in the wrong direction at Illinois. But, man, it sucks. It sucks watching that guy just do great work. Right now at Illinois. 913-3810-810. We're talking some college basketball to get things started. K-State, Missouri, KU, Sporting Royals, Chiefs, always a topic here in the program. We'll take a break. Coming up a little bit later on, we will get into some football with Jeff Kerr, baseball with R.J. Anderson, Frank Bull with some Frank opinions. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Eric Eager in the 5. It's a jam-packed program. It's off and running now.
The program with Soren Petro.
He is the Spam-eating champion of the world. 6 cans of Spam straight from the can.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk Eric Bieniemy. Coaching hires in the NFL. We'll talk some free agency as well with Jeff Kerr, the offseason. We're going to get into that coming up in our next segment. We're talking some basketball to get things started. Mizzou at Florida tonight. What is at stake for the Missouri Tigers? Curtis, I'll give you first shot since it's the school that you root for.
It's going to be their last shot at some kind of momentum before the SEC. I just think what's at stake for them is just establishing themselves as a team that can make any headway in the tournament. Just playing well as a unit. Xavier Pinson needs to return to the kind of player they need him to be to win. To me, it's almost apart from winning or losing. I want to see this team play the kind of basketball that I think can win in March. And if they do that and lose at Florida by 6, I'll consider that a step in the right direction. To me, it is even about winning or losing. It's about getting back to doing what they did when they were playing well.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a lot on the line for Konzo Martin because they're sliding down. I mean, Gary Parrish, I was shocked yesterday, said he still had him in his top 25. He said, so, you know, that makes him a 6. Well, it makes him, you know, the bottom 5 are the four sixes and a 7. Because there's 4 at mm-hmm. each ranking, so that would be 6. We get you through 24. So the first 7 would be the 25th team in the country. And so he said he still got him in his 25-1. But, I mean, I think they're trending down towards being an 8. And that means second round against Baylor, second round against mm-hmm. Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the game you want. Like, it's really important for them to get up to the 6 line so that you can avoid Gonzaga and Baylor and Michigan up on the top. I mean, you always want to avoid the ones, but I think there is a line of demarcation. And the way Illinois is playing, and if they get their top player back, I think you really want to avoid that. Like, if you want to have a fruitful run, and we've said this is a year that Konzo Martin, with all these upperclassmen, needs to bank as much equity as he can with the fan base. And, you know, by losing four of his last five, he's given a lot of that equity away. I mean, he's still going to make the tournament, by all accounts, by Gary Parrish's account. He's going to make the tournament. And, you know, if he does, that's going to bank some equity. But there's a lot more opportunity if you got a better seed. He sits as a 3.5-point dog going to Florida. Do you really want to be losers of five of your last six?
Nope. Yeah, definitely want to get off the eight, and getting off the seven would help. I mean, to me, just in the separation of teams, you definitely don't want a one, but, boy, if you can get to a six and you get that three in round two, you're thinking,
I think losing the A&M game really hurt Missouri.
Yeah.
Because I think it's one that they were going to win, because I think that team's mailed in the rest of the year. And clearly maybe they didn't, you know, keep the precautions, keep the guard up on protecting themselves from the virus. That, you know, I think that was going to be one that they were going to win. And you could be like, hey, we've won two out of our last three. But now they come into this game, a dog, tough game. Loses a four out of five, and they'll head into a game at LSU that they'll probably be, or at home against LSU, that they'll probably be, what, maybe a 2 or 3 point favorite, but having lost five out of six if they don't win this one?
Yeah, I could see them not being favored if things go poorly tonight, but it'll be a
true
field goal margin. I could see them being a dog.
LSU's 10-6 in the league, so, yeah, they may even be a dog at home. And, like, and a Ken Palm that's almost at 50?
Mm-hmm.
At what point are you, like, talking about when, like, what has to happen for them to be on the bubble? I've asked Gary Parrish that. He's a little bit more bullish on Missouri than I am. I know what he says, and he's got a good point. Well, put 60, you know, eight teams in this tournament. And that's where I think, okay, I think he's looking at it from the standpoint that they've got to fill the field, and Missouri's got enough quad one wins that they're going to be in. That they're fine already. They've got the quad one wins are going to do the talking, and that's going to be what puts them in. Or unless the committee goes, well, we didn't get any non-cons, and you know what? What better year to reward the little guys?
Yeah. I mean, Konzo Martin said a couple of days ago, he says that they feel safely in. I feel fairly safe, but I mean, I don't want to go.
I think they're
trash
in right
the
now.
Whole last two, yeah, I don't want to trash the last week of the season. They're going to be fortunate enough to be able to escape that opening round, that first round in the SEC. But I don't see them making any moves in that tournament. I think they could easily go out. They could easily lose to whoever they get in that second game. And to go that way, I could see a team saying, "Hey, the way you finish," because they talk about how important it is, you know, your last 10 or whatever. If you got nothing to show for, I can see them getting teams better than Missouri get bounced out every freaking year.
Couple of notes about them on KenPom. Number one, is KenPom the only site that won't remember your login? Like, could I one time go to KenPom and be logged in?
One time, baby.
One time.
One
I'm
time.
On that site all the time this time of year. Can you remember my login? I know, it first world problem, I have to reach my finger up and touch the little square in the corner. But still,
oh, the humanity.
Such an annoying step.
Digits.
Such an annoying step. They currently sit in KenPom at 48. They play number 27, Florida, of which they're being given a 32% chance to win by KenPom. Then they play number 29, LSU at home, of which they're being given a 50% chance of winning. They've got them winning 80-79 against LSU and losing 75. No, I'm sorry.
What was the percentage?
Losing 75-70 to Florida, losing 80-79 to LSU.
What was the percentage chance tonight?
Tonight, 32. So 1-3.
That's about right. that's a lie. The way Florida's playing defense, when this team plays teams who can lock it down on defense, I mean, I just see one of those nights where nobody is scoring.
My fear is you turn around and in the tournament they're going to be sitting, let's say they 2, 4, 6, they're at 7 now. If they would lose both, they could fall behind Mississippi State or Kentucky. Could be 8 or 9, and I forget their goofy thing. Don't 4 play and then another?
Yeah, 10 through 14 play, and then 5 through 9 play the
No, 11 through 14 to play. You've got five goals.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then 5 through 10 play the two winners, plus those two winners play in the thing. The top four seeds get a double bye.
Is it tough? Yeah. Okay, so they get a double bye. So, yeah, you're adding four each time. Four. So that would be 14 would become 12. 12 would become 10. Yeah. So, no, 8, then the next 8 play. So
yeah.
Yeah, I need to see the bracket. I'm sorry. I can't do that kind of having.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Six teams get one bye, and four teams get two byes. And four play in the first round. Giving you 8.
Yeah, okay, that's right. 14 will get you to 12.
Yeah.
And then you drop four more, gets you to 8. Yeah, that's right. So, anyway, I believe that you could be sitting here looking at playing a game against Auburn in the SEC championship game or in the SEC tournament as your first game.
No thanks. Seen that
right?
before.
Auburn, Georgia. So I find it hard to believe that if they drop Florida and LSU and then an Auburn or a Georgia, that they're going to slide into the tournament having lost 7 of their last 8. That to me, so that's what's at stake. You got to win one of these games, and you know, or you're going to be in a must win in the first round of the SEC tournament. Let's take a break. We'll shift gears, talk football with Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports. He's next in the program.
The program with Seren Petro.
The 7-foot, 1-inch package of superhuman strength and sublime skill.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, one of the big questions we listen to all during Super Bowl week, and rightfully so, we've been talking about it for 3 years in Kansas City. 2-plus years nationally, it reached a fever pitch nationally, is Eric Bieniemy not getting a head coaching job. And I think Jeff Kerr has done a fine job at CBS Sports. A couple of different things I'd point you to if you're interested in this. One, he's got a piece talking to Mike Tomlin, and Tomlin being quite surprised that Eric Bieniemy doesn't have a head coaching job. I'd also ask you to read his piece about Deuce Staley and how Dan Campbell at Detroit plans on using Deuce Staley, a guy who ran the ball for Andy Reid, cut his teeth in the coaching ranks under Andy Reid, and is a guy that also has a resume that warrants consideration for a head coaching job. Jeff Kerr joins us here on our T-Mobile guest line as we are welcoming him. T-Mobile, now America's fastest and largest 5G network. Jeff, thanks for the time. We appreciate it, buddy. How you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. No complaints. And I appreciate you kind of coming at the story with a number of different angles. Jeff is based out of Philadelphia as well, so you know he's got a good background with Deuce Staley and a lot of the guys that certainly have come through Philadelphia to here in Kansas City. Let's start with Mike Tomlin's comments about Eric Bieniemy. And I think we all agree that Eric Bieniemy's got the resume, and I think even owners would agree. They keep interviewing him. You know, Mike Tomlin, and it's not just Mike Tomlin's role. I've said this, like I would love for a coach or somebody to say this is why Eric Bieniemy's not getting the job, right? Like I know there's a new rule that they're going to put out that, or maybe it already did come out today, right? That they're going to wait till after a certain point for teams to be able to hire coaches. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills were actually the team that submitted the proposal to the league. And for me personally, I think if there is any legitimate reason why Eric Bieniemy doesn't have a job right now, it's because the Kansas City Chiefs go to the AFC Championship game every year. That's the only way I can explain it. And there's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah, and I think there is. And we've talked about it a lot. Look, I've gone down a bunch of different reasons why. I'll state them real quick without going deep into any of them. One, the thing you just said, he's still coaching and coach. They want to get on and get a good staff hired. And so that works against him. Two, he doesn't call plays. Right? And I know, well, Doug Peterson didn't call plays. Matt Nagy didn't call plays. I know, but I don't think that helped them. But they were able to overcome it. Eric Bieniemy hasn't, but he doesn't call plays. That's a common deal. He didn't coach quarterbacks. We looked this up. Curtis Siebel, who works with me, looked it up. There were 15 offensive 15 head coaches in the NFL this year that came up on the offensive side of the ball. All 15 either played quarterback or coached the quarterback position. He's never done that. So that's one that I don't hear people talk about that I think is of note that does play a role because everything is so quarterback driven. And then there's some stuff on his resume, stuff on his off the field past that goes way back to his days at Colorado as a player, and then some rumblings about some things that maybe weren't the best when he was a coach at Colorado, but seems to be far in his rearview mirror. And to this point, we've had no problems whatsoever here in Kansas City, and seemingly he's had no problems anywhere else around. Those are my best guesses on it, right? I'll nominate them as reasons, but this is why I think teams should have to announce why anyone they interviewed they didn't hire. If they had to do that, wouldn't coaches be better off because they at least think could say, oh, he's never coached the quarterback position. So the story you wrote about Deuce Staley, I think, is great. He left, what was a secure job, right? Or could have been perceived as a secure job, but he's getting a chance to go someplace else and get new duties because he's perhaps gotten word you're never going to get it just being what you are. So you need to go someplace else and prove you can be successful there. If all these coaches got the feedback from the owners, if they had to put out there, this is why you lost, then they could work on whatever it is that they're coming up short on, right?
I honestly feel like, and it's funny, being based out of Philadelphia, a lot of Eagles fans tend to say the Eagles kind of, I don't want to use the actual word, but, I'm trying to think of the right word to use with Deuce Staley here. They kind of didn't help Deuce Staley, and that's far beyond the case, in my opinion. It's nothing against Deuce Staley, but I feel like the Eagles also steered him in the right direction and be like, hey, Deuce, if you really want to be a head coach in the National Football League, you've been passed over now twice for our job. We gave you a serious interview this time, and I feel it's, yes, he was the assistant head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, and yes, he ran day-to-day operations for Doug Peterson when Peterson had COVID this year, but I think deep down we all knew he wasn't going to be a serious contender to be the head coach, and they picked Nick Sirianni, who has a history of a quarterback. So, yeah, you're right on that, and I feel like Dan Campbell is willing to give Deuce Staley more of a responsibility as an assistant head coach. I have a feeling Nick Sirianni would have brought Deuce Staley back in Philadelphia as an assistant head coach, as a running backs coach. He was a really good running backs coach here. He's a fan favorite, and it's easy to be comfortable. Deuce Staley wanted to be the assistant head coach and the running backs coach of the Philadelphia Eagles for the rest of his life. He would have been exactly that. I don't think he ever would have lost his job because he always got the most out of players. I've heard LeSean McCoy say this multiple times, how Deuce is my dude. He actually said that today on the All Things Covered podcast that we have at CBS. I've heard Darren Sproles say great things about Deuce Staley. LeGarrette Blount has told me personally how much he liked Deuce Staley. So there's a lot of recommendation there from running backs, but you're never going to get that from quarterbacks because he's never worked with them. And maybe that's where Dan Campbell is going to help Deuce Staley out here. And maybe that's the next step for Eric Bieniemy, actually calling plays. But again, it's mind-blowing to me because Brad Childress never called plays when he got hired to be a head coach, and near did Doug Peterson, near did Matt Nagy. It just confuses me how a guy who has a record-setting offense for 3 years and who has been instrumental in the development of Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes has told me how important Eric Bieniemy has been for him. If you can't get the stamp of approval from Patrick Mahomes, how do you become a head coach in this league?
I've had people tell me that have been in NFL owners meetings that it's one of the more amazing events you could possibly watch, a room of 32 billionaires, 32 human beings that have never been told no in their life, that then have to go out and try to, fight for themselves. And there are guys that are all the same way. A bunch of guys that have never heard no telling each other no. They said it's like there are times that you couldn't make a movie about it because no one would believe it, that's what the atmosphere is like in there. Is part of it that, because everything you just said about Deuce Staley, you could insert the name Eric Bieniemy, and all those things hold true. Different running backs, different players. In fact, even more, you could add in Patrick Mahomes, what is now considered to be God's gift to the NFL, says Bieniemy's great. Like, he's got an even bigger endorsement, and he's been an OC as well. And so that's all there. But there is... this to me, I've always thought is, systemic racism, when you bring that up, people like bristle at it, and they don't ever want to like uncover what that means. I think what part of it is how many guys in that room of owners have ever sat and had dinner with a black guy?
It's true. You have to wonder that, and I can't speak for 32 hours in the NFL, but you're right. They just come from a different planet than we do. It's actually mind-boggling, and I would love to just witness an interview with an Eric Bieniemy, with a Byron Leftwich, with a Todd Bowles, with a Deuce Staley, just to hear. I mean, and this is what's crazy about it. Eric Bieniemy has played in the National Football League, and some of these owners were still owning teams when Eric Bieniemy played. Jeffrey Lurie owned the Philadelphia Eagles when Eric Bieniemy played his last year for him under Andy Reid. So this is what's confusing to me. Like, unless the Eagles just didn't want to wait till after the Super Bowl, which they would have had to do for Eric Bieniemy, and this is where I kind of go on the other side of the fence here, play devil's advocate, just from being growing up with those Andy Reid Eagles teams, I always wondered why Jim Johnson couldn't get a job, why Brad Childress couldn't get a job right away. All these guys, John Harbaugh, Steve Spagnuolo, all these guys from that 1999 Eagles coaching tree. And then it hit me. Oh, wait, the Eagles go to the Super Bowl, or you know, they go to the NFC Championship game every year. And every team that had open hires wanted to fill them. So this is where this Buffalo Bills proposal comes in. This is where I think it helps Eric Bieniemy, because you can't hire a coach till after that coaching cycle. I'm feeling Eric Bieniemy would be hired in the day, but again, maybe that's just me being optimistic here, but under the current system, it just does not help, and it really does not help being a minority. It doesn't, and the NFL can pull whatever they want. Well, we hired, you know, David Culley was hired. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Robert Saul was hired. Okay, great. You know, you got two minority hires. Why can't we get more? There's plenty of qualified candidates that are more than deserving of a job. Byron Leftwich should probably be a head coach in the NFL this year, especially the work he did with Tom Brady.
Yeah, absolutely. So how about is part of like my shot at where there's like systemic racism? Like Bill Belichick played lacrosse and like a little bit of tight end or something. I don't even remember what he played in positions. Like I look back on like a lot of white guys that are coaches that, you know, they played one position and then they coach every other position, you know, at some small college, right? Low-level football. And then they're hired to coach nine different positions that they never played. Yet if you make it to the NFL, Eric Bieniemy and Deuce Staley are only qualified to coach running backs. It's like a penalty for being so good that you got all the way to the highest level. Like, or is it the dynamic that the reason great players never end up being head coaches is because they don't start their coaching career in their 20s, and so they're behind? Like, is there an element of that that I you know, the best college basketball coaches all sucked as players, and they went right into coaching. And so when they're 35, they've got 13 years of coaching experience as opposed to a guy who retired from the NBA at 36, doesn't want to spend 14 years at crap schools doing crap jobs. And so they take a bad job as a head coach straight out, and shockingly, it doesn't work. I mean, I think part of the systemic racism is like a black player finishes playing in the league and he's viewed as he can only coach the position he played, where a white guy who sucked, oh, he suddenly can coach every position.
Exactly. And this is what, like you said, it's almost like Eric Bieniemy and Deuce Staley are in a bubble because they were running backs. Here's one for you. David Culley. I feel like David Culley has been a wide receivers coach forever, whether it was in college or whether it was in the NFL. In fact, I'm actually looking up David Culley's career right now as we speak. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, wide receivers coach. Pittsburgh Steelers, wide receivers coach. Eagles, wide receivers coach. Kansas City Chiefs, wide receivers coach. Yeah, he was quarterback coach for the Bills for 2 years. So he finally got an upgrade in his late 50s. That was his, like, what made David Culley all of a sudden qualified to be a quarterback coach when he was a wide receivers coach for four NFL teams and for four Division I programs over 40 years. And it just feels like these guys are stuck in a bubble. And I don't know why that is. I wish there was a better understanding of the situation. And what also I think sucks is, and this may be just the current NFL head coaching cycle,
right?
But it feels like now more than ever, these coaches don't get as long as an opportunity. Like Todd Bowles, I think he only got 3 years to be a head coach. Everybody goes, well, he'd be a retread. I'm like, I don't think you're a retread when you coach the New York Jets. I'm sorry, I just don't.
Yeah, no, I don't either. I think, you know, and by the way, when you win some games as the New York Jets head coach. Jeff, I'm sorry, we're out of time. We could talk a lot longer about this, and we will. Thanks so much for giving us some time today. We'll reach out to you again soon because I'd like to talk more with you, buddy. Keep up the great work, and have yourself a great week.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Jeff Kerr, great stuff up there. Go check it out. Written about both Deuce Staley and Eric Bieniemy, quoting Mike Tomlin. Fresh.
End of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC Sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, Michigan lost by 23 last night. What school had the worst regular season loss in a year in which they were a number one seed in the NCAA tournament? Brought to you by Good Sense.